You bet.
All right, so how we want to kick
this off? By the way, I started recording,
off.
So I think that's in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
hello, everybody.
Hello.
All right, so are you going to do the countdown again? Do it. Yeah. Hit the countdown.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. Did I get it better that time? See, I didn't act.
I don't know. What were you trying to do?
I was trying to sound more put together than last time.
Okay. Well, for the record, I'm Kevin. Hello.
And I'm Brandon. This is a slow motion car crash in audio form. How you
yes,
doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Actually, I'm not doing great. I'm feeling really backed up right now, but that's all right. Because
ooh.
we have a solution to that, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, so we're going to be, tonight we're going to be, well, whenever you listen to it, we're going to be, have been talking about, we're going to have a timely discussion about
on the cutting edge.
The FX television program Justified. After that, we'll discuss probably the Sid Caesar Show or...
Just wrapped up its run. Wait, hang on a second. I'll get it. 70 months ago.
Yeah, so now, spoiler alert.
Show's been off the air longer than it was on the air. But we're here to talk about it. We're ready.
Right, because we were talking at one point about shows we like, and so then Brandon mentioned that this is a show that he really enjoyed, and I had not watched it, so I said, fine, I'll watch this, because I had mentioned The Expanse, and so he was going to watch that. So right now, Brandon is watching The Expanse. I watched...
Almost done. I'm in season 5.
Right, so I watched Justified. We figured we'd talk about it. And what we're going to do, for those of you who have watched the show, you'll remember... Was that season 2 or season 3?
It is season 2.
And then at another couple times it kind of comes up right near the end of the show's run.
Yeah.
A moonshine beverage called apple pie. That was a concoction of one of the short-term
Mags Bennett
character.
The matriarch of the Bennett family. One of the great families of the Appalachian region. What do they call it? Harlan County? Yeah.
It was Harlan County, which is a real county in Kentucky.
There you go.
Which is indeed notable for its poverty and crime. So that was consistent. So we thought we'd talk about that, but you know, to go along with that, we acquired for ourselves some moonshine.
Mm-hmm.
And I located, and then Brandon was able to locate for himself as well, an apple pie moonshine.
That's right.
We don't know if it's exactly the same or how, you know, close it hews to the fictional moonshine of the show, but it's the same name, same general principle, so we figured close enough.
Well,
so we figure we will drink this while we're talking about this show about Appalachia.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And
there is one key
difference
in the moonshines here, by the way.
Yeah.
I was re-watching parts of the episode where the apple pie moonshine and Mags Bennett got introduced earlier today. And Mags notes that her moonshine's 180 proof, and then she cuts it with some apple cider and cinnamon. And the old smoky Tennessee moonshine that I have here is 70 proof.
Yes, mine is also 70 proof. So that's because
that's a lot of apple cider.
I don't think you could sell like a 100 plus proof, right?
Well, I think there's some stuff that's strong, but yeah. So cheers. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, that kind of does taste like apple pie. That's nice.
Oh, so you've already gone into it here.
I just dug right in.
It's, well, listen. There you go. I was going to build up to that, but that's cool. So now I'm opening mine up. All right. It's going to be that kind of party. All right. Pouring mine into a glass.
Oh, see, I'm also drinking mine right out of the mason jar.
Well, in the show, they poured it into a glass.
They did, but nobody else in my house is going to drink out of this mason jar, so.
You had to know, you had to, you know, guess whether or not your glass was going to be
poisoned.
Pre-laced with poison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm never sure around this house, so that's why I just drink it straight out of the glass.
It does yours have some cinnamon to it?
Oh, very nice, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely got a big cinnamon note.
Mm-hmm. So it's a corn. Yours is, I'm guessing, also corn, because that's pretty much a moonshine staple. It's a corn-based neutral beverage, essentially.
Indeed.
Or neutral alcohol, and then you added the... So,
go for it.
I have the Midnight Moon brand. And you have something else...
I have Old Smoky Tennessee Moonshine.
Which is available at Walmart, I'm seeing.
Is it?
Yeah, you have a Walmart Moonshine. I'd like to congratulate you on that.
I was going to say, I think that makes it more authentic. That's got cred, right?
Yes. So why don't you go ahead?
Well, I was going to say, before we start digging into the show, you know, we've hit up our apple pie here, but how are you doing? Anything big going on? Anything exciting happening these days?
No, just overwhelmed with lots of things that I need to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very excited today. I understand that overwhelmed feeling a little bit, because I've been stacking up my list of things that I got to get done. And so I was excited today to find out that the IRS is going to give me another month to do the taxes.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
We've already done our taxes and received them, the refund.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I got things to add to my list. So in addition, you know, we've been talking about all the things in this house that I have repaired, rebuilt, whatnot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing more toilets, so I'm not even really counting that because I've already done them before. So, you know, just adding more toilets to the mix just seems like I can't really say anything there at that point. But now I also discovered the kitchen, the main kitchen light fixture would, again, appear to be the original to the house. And it's something is not working correctly in the ballast in there anymore. And it's old enough that I think I may need to be replacing that whole thing.
And is your fixture currently fluorescent?
It is.
If I had my druthers, I would make every fluorescent light in the world go away.
Yeah.
I hate fluorescent light. It is very... I have some photosensitivity, and every time I spend in a room with... particularly the smaller the room, with fluorescent light, it just does me no favors.
Yeah.
I feel like stuff is...
So, yeah, I think, I mean, changing it to LED is going to be nicer. There's going to be, you know, you've got some options in terms of color tuning.
Yeah.
It's going to be less cost. So, yeah.
And so here we are.
I'm out of things. That's basically it then. Oh, yeah, and tomorrow, taking both of the kids to go get their first dose of the coronavirus vaccine.
That's very good.
Josh is like, yes, I'm ready to do it. Fine. I'm good. We're there. For Zachary, who is – it's a weird situation. Zach's got a super high pain threshold. You know this, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm thinking of an instance. I'm not going to just mention
for the fair listener. Zachary has had two occasions in which he broke his foot doing something. We don't exactly know what, because he didn't at the time of the break actually like reveal that he had broken his foot.
Right.
And then just later on started limping. So he's done that twice. The other incident that I've, now that I think about it, the one you probably were not mentioning was the time as a very small child where he pulled a coat hanger through his cheek.
That is what I was thinking of, yes.
Oh. Yeah.
I remember when that happened, and I was quite skeezed out by that because that sounded so incredibly painful.
Yeah, yeah. So Zach can handle a lot of pain, but he is also kind of defensive about stuff. So, like trying to get the coronavirus test done, like the nasal swab, that was a complete failure for him. So I'm hoping that, so I'm trying to prep him for this. I mean, a shot doesn't take very long. It doesn't have to be a real big deal, but he just gets defensive about people coming at him with something. So today we tried a couple of different things. I thought we would try watching some videos to prep us for that. So Zach, being an 18-year-old who still loves many of the things that are part of the world of children, we watched a video of Daniel Tiger getting a shot.
Oh, very nice.
And Daniel did well, so that was good.
Of course.
And then I was concerned that didn't, you know, I thought, okay, so that's good, but I want to make sure we really cross the bridge all the way to people. So then we watched a video of Dolly Parton getting her shot, which was the only other shot video I could find that didn't look bad. And so now I come with this message. People of YouTube, why are you putting videos of your children on YouTube that are all titled things like Jimmy getting shots, bad reaction?
Because our children have become performance art pieces for us. Their suffering or discomfort or confusion is good.
And
for the clicks.
And of course, then the screenshots of all these are like red faced children,
right? Yeah.
You know, tear streaked faces, you know, kids contorting and screaming. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we're going to skip that one. We're not going to show that one. We're not going to show. So all I was left with was Daniel Tiger and Dolly Parton.
Well, two American heroes.
That's right.
If we're going to be honest.
That's right.
So,
only one of them sang a song. You can guess which one it was.
Did Dolly Parton sing while she's getting her shot?
She sang before the shot. She took the she reworked the words to the song Jolene into Vaccine. And the last line, I believe, I hope I got this right, you can look it up, is, if you wait till you're dead, that's a little too long. Speaking of Appalachian wisdom, there it is. So see, Dolly Parton, that's our segue back into Justified.
That's what I was thinking.
You like how I did that? That's professional level, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. So you introduced Justified as something that I should watch.
Yeah.
So why don't you set the table of Justified for those who perhaps have not watched it?
Or so Justified is based on an Elmore Leonard, maybe it's a novel or a short story?
Short story, Fire in the Hole.
Okay. And it's about a dude who is a U.S. Marshal who is named Raylan Givens, who is a little bit not a play-by-the-rules kind of guy, and ends up, as a sort of punishment, being sent to work in eastern Kentucky, which also happens to be exactly where he is from. And so it then follows him sort of just dealing with all manner of organized and disorganized crime in that county in particular. And but it's sort of a cop show, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like, the some of the hooks of it are, well, first of all, it's just got a great cast. Like, such really good people. Timothy Oliphant is Raylan Givens, and Walton Goggins. This is like Walton Goggins' breakout role.
Walton Goggins as Boyd Crowder.
Thank you, Boyd Crowder. I was busy thinking about Margot Martindale's character, and I blanked on Boyd Crowder there. So,
who was a right? Go ahead. I'll let you finish. Sorry.
It's got great actors, and I think it's got crisp writing, but then it's also like the thing that I realized this as I was rewatching some stuff today, was that one of the pieces that always hooked me for this show is that thread of going back home.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways that in going back home, you see home differently and home sees you differently. So Raylan Givens, who was, he was a kid, he was a hellraiser of his, in his own way in at home, comes back as they are frequently want to refer to him as a federal.
Right.
So, So I think that, like, for me, having, like, that was an interesting, wrinkle to that whole thing.
And it was interesting how much that role was very natural for him. Like, we didn't see a lot of what he was like. He was previously stationed in Miami.
Yep.
We don't see what he was like in Miami in terms of his kind of general attitude and such, but he fit right in with this kind of this duality,
mm-hmm.
of how other people saw him, and he realized to a very large degree he was very comfortable with how other people saw him. That was a him that he was just fine with. And that part of him really was the stronger part of him than the part that was a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, there are some ways it's almost like a deep cover story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, think of, like, Donnie Brasco or stuff like that, where, like, the story is about somebody who goes in deep cover and then they get sort of confused about which world they really, where their real allegiances lie and which side they're really on. It sort of plays out some of that sort of element as well.
Although his allegiances were clearly always as a lawman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how he defined being a lawman, I think, was influenced by where he was from.
Yeah.
Because there were some areas in which he gave no quarter.
Right.
He wasn't letting anybody off. He wasn't doing any, there was, but I don't know if this moonshine's getting to me already. he wasn't.
I've only finished half of my jar, so I don't think it's getting to me. I don't.
But he had a very strict personal code.
Yeah.
But that personal code, I think, was probably a little different than the rest of the people that we, characters that we met from that marshal's office.
Right.
In some ways, I think he was more buttoned up and by the book than some of them.
Yeah.
And then in other ways, he clearly was, he was pursuing things in a way that was not at all from the manual.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another one of those things that like is really, really like to me really intriguing about it. Like you said, that's a good way to put it. That he's got a very strict moral code, but he doesn't draw lines in the same places that his colleagues do. And frankly, the people, even the criminals, of Harlan County, many of them have got really strict moral codes. And they draw the lines in very different places than would be seen as conventional morality.
Yeah, and I think the ones that don't, the instances where people kind of violate their own moral code, it never works out for those people.
Right.
Both in terms of the consequences and in terms of how other people view them. Like there's a group of people that come in. There's a character, Dewey Crow. All right. Do you remember Dewey Crow?
Yep.
So Dewey is from Florida, makes his way to, Harlan County, and he falls in with, Boyd Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, the rest of Dewey Crow's family decides they're going to make their way up to Harlan County. But these seem to be people that had a really just kind of fluid sense of what was right and wrong, even amongst themselves,
right,
within their own minds. And in the end, they all end up dead. Nobody respects them.
Yep.
And it was interesting how I think if we were to think back on how that played out, largely that was because they did not have a defined sense of who they are.
Yeah.
And what was acceptable.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's very true. And in fact, as I'm thinking back about this, like, again, I watched it. I came to the show late, not as late as this, obviously, but I came to the show late. And I'm thinking about the whole sweep of it, like, every season is kind of its own story, right? It builds, and there are callbacks and ways that the whole thing continues to layer on top of itself. But you've also got in each season, kind of like one really standout actor who comes in a role, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that because I was like, oh, wait, I want to remember who played Dewey Crow, and it was Michael Rapaport. Right. And so that's like that.
No, that, that was Dewey's.
Oh, you're right. That's cousin. His brother.
I thought it was his cousin.
You could be right.
I could be.
You're probably right. It's the moonshine getting to me. But in every, you know what I mean? But to go to that point, in every season, you've got one or two like of these character actors that do amazing work, that are the kind of people you've seen all over the place, that just come in and they like light up a role, to be like a foil and to bring another element or another, you know, another side to this. And I think, like you said, like when the Crow family comes in and they're the outsiders with this.
And that's Daryl, you know, Crow.
Yes, you're right. That's my bad. But, you know, you've got, as I said, Margot Martindale has a season long role. Really, you get McKelty Williamson, who's got a really great thread that they follow with his family. And again, it's all these families. It's all these family networks that keep kind of getting uncovered. So
right, people that have occupied space for a significant period of time.
Yeah.
That are kind of part of the landscape. You mentioned Ma Bennett, Margot Martindale's character, which, by the way, Margot Martindale is good in whatever role she plays.
Anything.
You put her in The Americans, and she's a, you know, a kind of a Russian spy babushka
Yeah.
And she is incredible in that. That was where I first really noticed her.
Yeah.
Obviously a completely different sort of milieu here in Justified.
Yes.
And she, the thing was like, okay, so you fully believe that she was this, you know, World War II veteran Russian spy,
mm-hmm.
in the Americans. And you fully believe that she is nothing other than somebody who is an Appalachian, you know, matriarch,
yeah,
crime boss.
She's stunning.
And she's an example. Her character, though, is an example of what I was talking about earlier. She, going into her arc, she decided to go against, for her own gain,
mm-hmm.
what had been her moral code.
Right.
This whole idea that the family and their land, you know, the mountain, the people that, you know, her neighbors, the people that she lived around, that this was a community.
Yep.
And that the community should be protected. And when she decided to sell out her neighbors in order to make a significant amount of money from a mining company.
Yeah.
Very quickly, she that led to everybody in the community hated her.
Uh-huh.
Her sons, who were already, you know, train wrecks.
Yeah. That's one way to put it.
You know, in short order, the whole Bennett family was dead, except for maybe the greatest acting job in the whole, the one the character whose actor did the most standout job of anybody.
Yeah.
And that was Dickie Bennett, who was...
I could watch Jeremy Davies play that insane role just like over and over and over again.
Yeah, and there was...
that dude is so good.
And there were so many things. Like, you know, we know this about certain actors, where they will, yeah, make a choice, like, in terms of, like, costume or a certain part of their physicality or,
mm-hmm.
speech patterns or something. And it seems over the top. Like, they're making an over-the-top choice because they're trying to strongly define that character. And you can typically tell it's over the top. But when they're good actors, it doesn't end up really ruining what they're trying to do.
Yep.
But you can tell that's what they're trying to do. The Dickie Bennett character, you can tell that Jeremy Davies made some really crazy choices. Like his hair.
Yeah.
I don't know if he, in real life, combed his hair over the course of the whole time he was acting in this show or not.
Seriously.
Or there was one time where, like just part of the side of his head was shaved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just all these weird things. But never did those feel over the top. No. Like, his speech patterns were clearly exaggerated. Mm. And it never felt over the top. It all still felt like an actual character.
Yeah, it was embodied just the whole time. That's the thing. Yeah. It never, at no point are you like, well, now this isn't a real person. It's like, this is a weird ass person.
He was not a real person. I mean, I don't know that you would meet a person with all of the quirks that he had who still then was as functional as he was.
Oh, man.
Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
How big are your air quotes for functional on Dickie Bennett there?
Yeah, but see, so Dickie Bennett had a really unique way of verbalizing, right?
Yes, he did.
And the other person who had a really unique way of verbalizing on the show was Walton Goggins' character, Boyd Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the end of the show, I was just like, speak up, Boyd. Just pick up the pace. And you don't have to whisper everything. You know what I mean? After a point, it felt more of like we had this forced idea of we wanted to lend this character a certain kind of both mixture of gravitas and insanity in the way that he kind of carried himself.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to criticize the acting job that Walton Goggins did, But after a point, it seemed like a bit much, particularly for a character who had so much screen time to me.
Yeah.
But I never felt that way about Dickie Bennett.
No.
I wanted to see more Dickie Bennett. When episodes didn't have Dickie Bennett, I was like, oh, man. And then he wasn't around for a while, and I was upset. And then he came back, and I was like, yes! Yeah. This is great. And he was in a wheelchair all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah. No, man, you gotta love, yeah, so good. Speaking of actors who inhabit like these wildly different characters, Jerry Burns plays, and this was my introduction to Jerry Burns, is playing a character named Win Duffy, who is he's just a strange guy to pin down, and
you know why? Because Wynn's moral code is that he has no moral code.
No, yeah.
And he's the one guy that's he's kind of an exception to the rule, but he still follows the rule.
Right.
Wynn will follow whatever wind will keep him aloft.
Which makes him like the really wild counter in the show, where you've got all these people with these very skewed and yet rigid moral codes, and then Wynn is really just surviving, right?
Yeah, his moral code is, I should survive.
Yeah.
I need to stay alive. And he is also the one outsider who does the best job, even though he shows a real disdain for the people, of acclimating to the environment.
Yep.
Because every other outsider you see, and even people who are technically not even outsiders, you see a couple of those people in like season 6.
Yeah.
Those people did a terrible job of actually acclimating to Harlan County, even though they were still Appalachian people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true.
So go ahead.
So I was just going to say, Win Duffy is a wild character. And feels like one of those characters, and like his role kept growing. And I think sometimes it happens in a show that, I know it happens sometimes in a show that somebody is intended to have like sort of a short shelf life.
Right.
And they end up like really like sort of acting their way into the DNA of the show. You know what I mean?
Right. There's another show. I gotta try to remember which show it is where an actor was supposed to be gone after like the first couple episodes. Oh, Chris Pratt's character in Parks and Recreation.
Right.
So he was only supposed to be in there for a couple of episodes, but he clearly figured something out that made him indispensable to the show. And you get the sense that maybe Win Duffy
would have acted
himself into a bigger role for his character.
Yeah. Because he ends up, most of these kinds of, like, these different, like, criminal elements sort of weave in and out, or they run through for an arc and then they're gone. And he shows up and he kind of weaves in and out, but he doesn't actually ever leave.
The only one that makes it all the way through, right?
Him and Boyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Boyd was going to. Yes. Right, because Boyd and Raylan are kind of two sides of the same coin.
Yes,
the show makes that very clear at the start.
Right,
or the show kind of alludes to that at the start, and by the end, the show fully embraces. Yes, that is what we meant.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you thought you saw, that is indeed the case.
Yeah. So you could have definitely imagined that the original thought of the show was that it was that these two were going to be poles, that the whole thing was going to sort of, work around. And that you were going to have these great arcs that were going to flow through. And a guy like Win Duffy ends up just, insinuating himself into the show in a deeper way.
Right. I think it was season one even, wasn't it, where he...
Yeah,
he came in and he was a kind of a side character to. There was a little plot line, and he was kind of secondary within that plot line.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
And yet he survived.
There was something there, and they're like, oh, okay. And then he comes back. Yeah. So that was my introduction to the actor Jerry Burns. The other role that I know him for best is like, well, and you were saying that you thought this was a very different type of role for him compared to the other roles you know him. What else do you know him from?
Well, he was in like some 80s or 90s kind of cast sitcom, kind of a ensemble sort of show.
Yeah, he was. I don't remember what it is.
That's where he started out, which was significantly different than this.
Very different from this, yeah.
What do you remember him from?
Well, that's the thing. I didn't remember it. I mean, you're saying that, and I'm trying to look back. I don't...
All right, so let's look up his filmography, because I think that's probably important, because we're talking about it. Right? I mean,
I gotta tell you, I don't see what it is from like the 80s that I would remember him from.
Well, he was in Well, he was in Max Headroom.
Is that what you're remembering? Is his role in Max Headroom?
I don't know that. I remember watching Max Headroom. But then there was a show called Dear John that was on for a number of seasons, and he was a main character in that.
Okay.
And then he appeared as a character actor all from the early 80s through the 90s as kind of this smarmy sort of...
Yeah.
Unlikably unlikable, or unlikable likable, whichever way you want to call it, you know, sort of guy who filled these little one-off roles in many of these as the person who in the end... you know, paid the price for being such a dingus.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was on shows like Fantasy Island. You know, all these one-off things. He was in Crime Story. Hunter, Riptide. These were all these, you know, Remington Steele. If we remember all of these different shows, he was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Once, you know,
that's what I know him from, because I loved Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I watched that all the time.
But he would show up in these either single roles or or kind of short little arcs in a number of shows. Now, did you see him in Breaking Bad or in Burn Notice?
So I saw him in Breaking Bad, but he didn't like stand out to me. I did see him in Burn Notice, and it's funny because he was doing that at basically the same time he was doing Justified.
Right.
But I didn't see Justified until after I'd seen Burn Notice.
So it's those are Burn similar Notice. Characters. Those are fairly similar.
But then the one that's not much like that at all is playing the police chief in Angie Tribeca. Have you seen that?
I've seen some of that, yes.
Yes. That's a real different role.
But that's kind of coming, because he was always just kind of a smarmy, the smarmy, funny neighbor. Whoever was like, oh, ho, 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 we love him, but, we don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. By the way, and I just found Angie Tribeca, too. So, again, I'm right on the cutting edge of shows here.
I watched a little bit of that, and I may eventually watch more of it.
It's pretty, here's the thing. When I first watched it, my first thought was, they've brought back Police Squad.
Right. I think that's entirely the sort of thing they're going for.
Yeah.
If not, then they need to accept the fact.
If not, they needed somebody to talk to them, because that's what they got. But yeah. So anyway. Yeah, having only known Jerry Burns, I didn't know him in any of the comic roles of his earlier years. I only knew him as these kind of like bad guy roles. And so then to see him in Angie Tribeca, like my head fell off a little bit.
But he really is. He is the sole, well, not the sole, but he is probably the primary comic relief in Justified.
Yeah.
Whenever he is a part of the story. he's got this kind of sarcastic way about him, turn of a phrase sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He brings levity to the situations he's in. And I think that's consistent with who he was as an actor. What seemed to me was that in Justified, there were a lot of actors they brought in who were more so known for their comedic work.
Yeah.
And showed what a kind of a funny person can do with a serious role.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because there's a little bit of the, you have to laugh a little bit when things are so screwed up and crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a comedian can communicate that a little bit. They kind of naturally get that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Stephen Tobolowsky's got a great arc, doesn't he?
Which one was he? He's the FBI agent?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just, I always love Steve. I always love him.
and he doesn't play it up.
I would watch that dude do anything.
And there's nothing funny about what he does in this show.
No.
But you can tell he is the butt of the joke
mm-hmm.
all the time. Yeah. But he's perfect at that, at yeah. being the butt of the joke. So what would you say was, did you have a least favorite main character? Or a favorite main character? We've talked about some of the recurring characters that we really enjoyed. But beyond like Wynn Duffy or Raylan or Boyd.
Right. So you get past those guys and it's gotta be Art Mullen.
Yep.
Right.
The deputy in charge of the office.
That exactly. Raylan
works in. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just wonderful.
Yes.
He's got that. He gets that, like, exasperated thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. He crushes that. Yeah, he would probably be, other than the, like, those two poles of the show, I would say he's it for me.
Yeah, that is the same for me. I found it. I was genuinely, there was a period of time where he and Raylan were not getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And that I genuinely felt that because I liked Art Mullen so much.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh man, if Art doesn't like, if Art's mad at him right now, did mm-hmm. he really do something? Did he do something wrong then? Maybe I should be thinking,
that's right.
Maybe I should have a more negative view of Raylan right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, again, Art is so like fatherly to mm-hmm. to Raylan in that role that it's like you want everyone to get along. You want the family, you yeah. know. It doesn't at that point feel like a workplace tension almost as much as it feels like a family tension.
Yes, and it's interesting how virtually every conversation that Art Mullen and Raylan Givens have ends with Raylan Givens saying, "We okay?"
Yeah. Always looking for that approval.
Mm-hmm. And then there's that period of time where really, and it's funny, that the time when Art was most, had just kind of given up on Raylan the most.
Yeah.
Was actually because of something that Raylan didn't do. It wasn't Raylan's fault.
Yeah.
Raylan's ex-wife, who becomes kind of his current love,
mm-hmm.
off and on, Wynonna, she steals some money from an evidence locker, right?
Right.
And Raylan gets her to put it back, but in the course of this, Art figures out that something had gone amiss there.
Yeah.
And he's very disappointed in Raylan. even though Raylan, and the whole time, as soon as Raylan knew that she had done this stupid thing, he was flipped out.
Yeah.
Like, that was about as out of control as you saw him in terms of not really feeling like he was on top of whatever situation he, you know, was facing him down. I didn't really like the Winona character that much.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I really grew, and the Ava character, I thought I might like her at first, and then there was a period of time where I really didn't like her.
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end, I started to warm up to her again. Like, once things had completely spiraled out of control for her, and it was clear that she had been used again by a Crowder. She had been married to Boyd Crowder's brother, who beat her.
Yep.
And she ended up killing him. And then she fell in with Boyd as Boyd's lover in the nighttime, partner in the daytime. And and throughout that period, I thought she was really unlikable. Like, her motivations, I couldn't come up with a justification. They weren't justified. Why she was making the decision she did, you know? Oh,
that was nice.
Yeah, okay, it's all right. That. That's good. That was good. But at the end, after Boyd has kind of cast her aside as well.
Right.
And then she is just completely unmoored. She became more likable again. I think she was kind of trying to find something different. It was clear that she was a character who had just been kind of, you know, used up and manipulated by a series of men.
Right.
Raylan kind of being one of them, although there was a really short kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can almost say that, I mean, because as soon as then it didn't make sense, then that thing stopped.
Yeah.
But in a sense, you can see where she felt, or that was, and in which case, she was kind of used or manipulated, because a relationship probably really shouldn't have started between Ava Crowder and Raylan Givens.
Right.
Under any circumstance. And even though then Raylan said, no, this can't happen, she could say, well, here's somebody that I always looked up to, that I always had an affection for, comes home. He is supposedly on the right side of the law. Maybe that, you know, this could be a stabilizing opportunity for me. I don't want to make it, opportunity sounds weird, but, and then he says, no, this can't happen. I could see where she would then, again, kind of feel used and cast aside. You know. But I have some significant sympathy for her at the end. She has just been used consistently by crappy men for a significant period of time.
Yeah.
And at that point, it becomes more difficult to figure out what is the right thing to do. I think she did a pretty good job of it for this. The show kind of carries through where she had moved way off.
Mm-hmm.
She had a child that she was just trying to raise, and she was trying to do positive things. And I thought she did a pretty good job. And that was one of the few times where Raylan that kind of put his very strict moral code aside from a professional perspective. Like, she's a fugitive, right, really, and he didn't take her in.
Yeah, it's true. That's where sort of like that, you know, whether his loyalty lies with the job or with home, like, really comes into conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the other thing I think I want to say about the show that I didn't notice it necessarily when I first watched it, because I watched it kind of in a blitz, right? I came to it late, and I was like, oh, I'm going to catch up on this thing. But you really can, I think. I think you can watch these seasons as semi-independent stories. If the story overall really hooks you in, you can follow the whole thread, and it does end up with some closure. Let's talk about that a little bit. Because you and I were talking about this before, that in terms of like final episode, like ending of the story, that Justified does better than most at actually ending in a way that's satisfying and consistent with the whole story.
Yes. It was the most satisfying conclusion to a long-running show that I enjoyed. A show that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
That I can recall. It wasn't... It didn't just get kind of schmaltzy. It didn't just try and rush through a bunch of answers and conclusions.
Right.
It felt like a natural progression.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think that sometimes it's hard for a show to like to stick the landing and still feel like what it's doing at the end, it fits with the DNA of what the show has been. Mm-hmm. And I think it did that. It did it really well. So it does, I feel like it comes to a satisfying conclusion and doesn't leave you sort of going, oh, but they could have done this or they could have done that. Or
yeah.
Yeah.
We should.
I thought the season where they introduced Poochie was a mistake, but
that was weird. Yeah,
that was. But thankfully, Poochie died on his way back to his home planet.
I don't know where they found an actual shark in Harlan County for Poochie to jump. There were some disappointing characters.
Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of turns by people who I think have shown to be good actors.
Okay.
I did not like the Sam Elliott character at all. Okay. I just never felt like... He never felt as menacing as he was, you know, seemed to be indicated to be. He never felt as efficient or, you know, there was no part of him where I thought, yes, he is in fact this brutal crime lord that everyone thinks he is.
Sure.
It just never carried through for me. That whole season felt a little thin to me in that regard, where those people were involved. Sure. Him and then... who was his girlfriend, betrayer, Ted Danson's wife? What was
it? Oh, Mary Steenburgen.
Yes. I mean, I don't think the acting was bad or anything. I also had a difficult time watching Sam Elliott without a mustache. I think that was maybe part of it. His mouth and lip does weird things.
It's upsetting. It was. Yeah, it was. That's speaking of bold choices. That's like, yeah, it's jarring.
It would be like if we had had to watch Walton Goggins act like naked from the waist down the whole time or something. It was just weird. Oh my God. That's going to be distracting at some point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It is like half of what you're thinking about when he's on screen. Like, where did the mustache go?
The lip just moves weird. It seems really big and thick, and it curls around at the bottom. It's like,
Because the lip was like, it's my time to shine. I've been hiding for years. I'm coming out.
Where are we going with this? Reeling? I don't know. That's not a good Sam Elliott. But just have to grab your... Where are we going with this? Reeling? That's still not good. It's still not. I'm not hitting the mark. All right, let's run that through again. And I also, Neil McDonough, who is an actor I typically kind of like.
Yeah.
His Robert Quarles character.
Wasn't great. Detroit
crime boss who suddenly became a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And there's just this kind of little side thing about him that, you know, we didn't really talk about much, that he would pick up male prostitutes and torture and kill them. You know, it's kind of, you felt like, That felt a little tacked. Felt like kind of a big character thing to just kind of tack on there and not really talk about, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I liked the character Ellen May. She had a, do you remember Ellen May?
I'm trying to remember Ellen May.
So she was the she worked at the brothel.
Oh yeah.
And she kept popping up, and you know, it was always, you know, somebody, okay, we need somebody to go and you know, collect some oxy from somebody, or we need somebody to rip off a John, or we need somebody, you know, she was always kind of getting pushed around too.
Yeah.
And then she found herself some Jesus, and then she kept some of that Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Without, you know, it was like there was a definite change then in who she was. And I felt like that was, she, there was a real sympathetic element to her.
Yeah.
I thought. She made a significant movement as a human. Her character made a significant, evolution as a human.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
And I thought it was well acted. Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, you would agree this is a show. If people haven't seen it and they, you know, still have any quarantine time left, you'd say it's worth checking out?
Yeah. Yeah. I would just trying to think of a clever rating system for it, but I don't have one. So.
You could rate it.
Four and a half ice cream cones out of five.
That's nice. I like
that. Was like the most low-key character trait that that Raylan Givens had is that he loves ice cream.
That's right.
Just like a couple times a season, there'd be like, he wants to get ice cream in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. Or we got to stop off at this store to get me some ice cream. Or, you know, yeah. It's good because they didn't overplay it. Because sometimes you give a character a weird little quirk like that.
Yeah.
And it becomes the sort of thing where every episode, well, how do we fit in that he needs some ice cream? We got to get this motherfucker some ice cream.
Right.
How are we going to fit this in?
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. It was just periodically.
Periodically, there he is with a cone.
Yeah. You and know? I liked how at the end, with his child, he got ice cream with his child and was eating ice cream with her. That felt very natural. That was another thing in that last episode where you then, and it was really, I thought, going back to that last episode, much of it has to be attributable to the acting.
Sure. Is
how much in the course of just one episode you saw him change. Because the last episode moves forward sometime, right?
Mm-hmm.
A certain number of years.
Yep.
But you don't see, obviously, we didn't see 5 years of this character progression of him being back in Miami and having a child. And then having his relationship with Winona, that they were going to try again, having that fail and hurt. She gets married to somebody else. We just see him as a person who has kind of gone on a personal journey.
Right.
And he pulled that off. He seemed like that new person. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
I would, absolutely.
And I don't think that's an easy thing to do when you have, you know, over the course of basically six seasons, someone is very clearly defined in a certain way. And he's kind of, even though he was kind of a cool under pressure guy, he was a really high strung guy. And then he was not a high strung guy at the end.
Right.
And he was very true to who he still was, kind of his core elements of who he was as a person.
But yeah.
His motivations had changed dramatically.
Still the same person, and yet there's this layer that has developed.
And that's when he goes and sees Ava in California, and mm-hmm. is like, "No, we're fine. I'm not running you in. Good luck.
Yeah.
Keep it up." And then he sees, we haven't talked about this, then how the show ends. He goes and sees Boyd in jail, and tells Boyd that Ava's dead. Right.
Yeah.
Just in case Boyd has some designs on. It's just, you know. So, and then that moment he has with Boyd is very reflective of kind of him being at peace with this new way of being, with Raylan being at peace with this new way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And how Boyd is actually a little bit different too.
Yeah.
Boyd is still his kind of over-talking sort of guy, but like he really wanted that kind of different thing, that peace with Raylan as well.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to be able to cohabitate. Because there was a the majority of the show, it really seemed like you would not reach the end and have a world where both Raylan Givens and Boyd Crowder could both exist.
Yeah.
They both clearly felt that way. As much as Boyd would always talk about, well, Raylan, we're like brothers, Raylan. And but it was, he would have clearly taken out Raylan Givens at any time if he felt he could have.
Mm-hmm.
Raylan Givens stood in his way. And at the end, they both were kind of like, I think we can get along.
That's it.
So it's really a moral play at the end. The whole show is about, why can't we just get along?
It's really,
I'm sure you agree with me that every...
That's really ultimately what it is all about. Is it's all
every
about
jot and tittle throughout was building.
Why can't
that.
We all just get along? That's true.
I don't think that there's any opportunity to second guess me on that.
No. I think that's unassailable.
I also liked in the last season we got to see more of Tim Gutterson, the male agent in the office.
Right.
I thought he had been kind of always a little bit amused and annoyed by Raylan,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of had reached a certain peace themselves.
Yeah.
As things were building there. And I also liked where they went with the female agent.
Oh, right, yeah.
Rachel Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
How she took on more of a leadership role. And, you know, and what the changes that came with her for that. I thought that was a respectful evolution for her character, too.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, I got to go get my kid to bed so I can get him up in the morning and get him a big shot.
All right. So, well, yeah. So now it's another episode in the can.
In the can.
Well, yeah. It's not quite canned, right?
No. It's because we got a jar. It's jars of moonshine. So
you've got to debone it. And
in
then
the jar. I do have to debone it. And then I tenderize it.
Mm.
And then I marinate it.
Mm.
Then I put it in the auditory sous vide, so that it comes out extra tender.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I think we all like a tender episode.
And then just put a quick sear on it. And then I post it on Anchor. And that's how it comes to you. All right.
All right. Very good. All right. On that note, as we have again kind of rolled to a stop here with the episode, as I tend to take us down those paths.
I think our new slogan is Sons of the Double Cheeseburger, the podcast that grinds to a halt.
It's like in a TV show or a movie. Where, like, the driver gets shot and the car just kind of slowly and then bumps into, like, a wall or something. That's us.
See, if they did TV shows more realistically, that's what would happen. Instead of what they do is that the car hits the wall and it explodes in a giant fireball, right? We're the more realistic version where it just sort of slowly rolls down the hill the rest of the way.
And then we just wander off.
And then just bumps into a parking meter.
I like it.
All righty.
So do you think this moonshine needs to be refrigerated? Or is it?
I don't think so.
It's pretty stable, right?
I think it's a standard stable alcohol product. I think what you do is you leave it out, and then you finish the bottle tomorrow.
Oh, my God. I can't. I go for my...
Oh, that's right. You can't drink tomorrow. I forgot about that. Okay, save it for Saturday. Perfect. All right. You're going to finish the bottle Saturday. I'll check back in with you on that.
All right, very good. That's a lot to finish. I'm going to die. So I will talk to you later.
From the great beyond. All right. So good talking to you, man.
All right,
everybody take care.